the world that we're going to preach about from that passage today, and you are not alone, so we'll see what happens. We're continuing our series through Jeremiah as we've been looking at the life of the prophet Jeremiah, a man who worked and prophesied and ministered for about 40 years as he saw five kings come and go, as he watched the city in which he dwelled and grew up and ministered and worked burn to the ground, and as he is hauled off in exile. Not a very happy passage. Not a very happy book in the grand scheme of things, but one in which we hope we can pull joy and hope from, even in the midst of dark times. And so we're going to be looking at that today. If you want to follow along, it's actually going to be a little tough. There are places you can go. I would go to Jeremiah 36. You can wind up back here. But we're going to kind of jump all over the book of Jeremiah today. I want you to think for just a moment and ask yourself this question. How far are you willing to go for a friend? How far are you willing to go for a friend? The book I'll Push You was released just earlier this summer. It chronicles the journey of two best friends, Justin Skisuk and Patrick Gray. They had been best friends since they were kids. They were born 2 days apart in the same hospital in the same small town in Oregon. They had grown up going to the same schools and had been best friends since kindergarten. Each one was the best man in the other one's wedding. Justin Skisuk and his family had moved away to California, and Patrick Gray and his family moved on to Idaho, but they stayed in touch. They visited each other a couple times a year. They were best friends. And in high school, going into college, Justin developed weakness in his body that over the course of the next 10 to 15 years began to spread, first from one foot and then to the other, and then slowly throughout his body. And the doctors had no idea what was going on. After numerous tests and a couple of different false diagnoses, they finally came back with multifocal acquired motor axopathy. I can't even say it, and I've practiced it all week. Or MAMA, that might be a little bit easier for you. But essentially, it's a neuromuscular disease, very similar to ALS or Lou Gehrig's, as we mostly call it. And quickly, he became confined to a wheelchair, needing help from his wife to do the various tasks of life. And his friend Patrick was there to help as well, in any way that he could. One night, Justin was watching a special on PBS about the Camino de Santiago, a 500-mile pilgrimage route through the mountains of Spain. And it finishes at a large cathedral in the city of Compostela, the Cathedral of St. James. And Justin just was struck by that entire trip. And a few days later, Patrick and his family came to visit, and he put on that recording, and they watched it together. And as that recording ended, Justin looked at Patrick, and he said, "What do you think? I'd really love to complete that journey one day." And Patrick looked at him for just a second and then said, "I'll push you." And everyone thought they were crazy. No one believed they were serious. They'd done lots of fun and kind of wild things before, but nobody, not their friends, not their wives, not anyone, thought they could accomplish this task. But Justin's family sold their house and moved to Idaho, and they began to train together every day. He would pull his friend and push his friend up and down the mountains getting ready. And after a year of training, in the summer of 2014, over the course of 35 days, Patrick and Justin worked together, along with more than 100 other pilgrims along the route, to traverse the entire 500 miles, one pushing the other. How far are you willing to go for a friend? In the summer of 2003, I had signed up for a mission trip to Bremen, Germany. I went with a group of fellow Harding students, and we'd all signed up to spend 7 weeks encouraging and being encouraged by the Christians there in Bremen. And part of our task was to use English one-on-one conversations with people just from off the streets and from around the community to share our faith and to introduce them to Christ. That summer was also the summer I was dealing with the worst part of my depression. I've talked about that up here before, but I dealt with depression for over 2.5 years, and this was the depth of that. In fact, I questioned whether or not I should even go, because that depression hindered everything about life and kept me from functioning in many ways that were helpful and meaningful to other people. Somehow I went, somehow I met with all my students, and I made it through the day, and one of the things that helped was my friend Ashley. Ashley was along on that trip, and almost every day she and I would go for a walk or a run, sometimes for miles on end, so that I could talk or be silent or process my emotions or clear my head or simply be with another person who didn't mind how I felt. And miles upon miles she traveled with me, both to work out herself and also to help me out as we struggled together. How far are you willing to go for a friend? We all need friends, someone who is there for us. It's interesting to me that when God created, at the beginning of our Bible, everything that He made was described as good and very good. Everything that God spoke into being and crafted from his imagination was considered very, very good. Until Chapter 2, verse 18, when he watches the loneliness that Adam is experiencing and says, it is not good for man to be alone. Inherent in the very way that we are made is that we need to have friendships and relationships with other people. And friendship is a beautiful thing, isn't it? Friendship is one of those things in life that's difficult to define or describe. In fact, I Googled it this week just trying to figure out how all the different thesauries and dictionaries tried to explain this word, and the answer is the state of being a friend. Not at all helpful, right? It's difficult to define, but we know it when we see it. Because with our friends, we can be open and honest. We can share our lives, our longings, and the deep things of our hearts. I love how C.S. Lewis describes friendship in his book, The Four Loves. He doesn't seek to define it. He simply says this: friendship is born at the moment when one man says to another, "What, you too? I thought no one but myself felt this way, experienced these things, fill in the blank." Friendship is about commitment, consistency, and care. It is based on trust, acceptance, honesty, and time. We need true and trustworthy friends. As Shakespeare wrote in Hamlet, "Those friends thou hast and their adoption tried, grapple them unto thy soul with hoops of steel." If you find a real friend, keep them as close and as tight as you possibly can. One of the biblical statements of wisdom that sticks with me states this: one who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Friends are an amazing thing. They can be a great blessing and help in our lives. And if anyone was in need of a friend, it was Jeremiah. We know more about Jeremiah's life than any other prophet in the Old Testament. We have all these autobiographical sections that discuss what he's like and how he feels and the things that he's experiencing. He gives us all these various little vignettes and narratives from throughout his life. And as you read them, you realize there's a reason that Jeremiah is called the weeping prophet. Because Jeremiah had an incredibly difficult time. Jeremiah was lonely. He was told not to marry as an illustration to the people of Israel. Jeremiah was rejected by his hometown and his clan. In fact, some of his kind of extended family even plotted to kill him early on in his ministry out of hatred for him and what he stood for. Jeremiah is told at a different point that all of his so-called friends were actually slanderers of him. They just talked behind his back, and that no one around him spoke the truth to him. They were simply waiting for him to fall so that they could prevail over him and take revenge on him. Now, at this time, Jeremiah is not the only person who is speaking truth for God, speaking out against the oppression that they see and the violence of the kings and officials. Jeremiah is not alone. We know of at least one other man, a man by the name of Uriah, who prophesied for God and who was subsequently killed by King Jehoiakim for his trouble. Not something that's going to bolster your desire to be a prophet, adding to Jeremiah's loneliness. Jeremiah was imprisoned and enchained. He was hated and harmed. He was mistreated and maligned for more than 40 years of his ministry. His was a lonely life. But in spite of it all, in spite of the false friendships, the broken relationships, the family turmoil and troubles that he faced, Jeremiah was blessed by four true friends in his lifetime. And I just want to meet them really quickly. One is a guy by the name of Ahikam, who is one of his friends and protectors. Ahikam had been part of discovering the lost Torah scrolls during Josiah's reign and helping recover the law for the lives of the people. And when King Jehoiakim sought to kill Jeremiah just as he had killed Uriah, well, Ahikam jumped in and supported Jeremiah and kept him safe. Ahikam had a son by the name of Gedaliah, who we read about a little bit this morning. He would eventually be appointed as governor over the remnant of the people that King Nebuchadnezzar leaves behind after he destroys the city of Jerusalem. But when Jeremiah is released from one of his captivities, we're told that Gedaliah does what his father did. He steps in, he takes him into his home, he makes him one of his own family, and he protects him. We have a third friend, a guy by the name of Ebed-Melech, which literally just means the servant or slave of the king. He was a royal official and a friend of Jeremiah's. And Ebed-Melech himself was an outcast in many ways. He was a slave. He didn't have the right skin color, read that in quotation marks, because he's a Cushite from Africa. He doesn't look like the people around him. Not only that, but he's a eunuch who is enslaved to the king of Jerusalem, and because he's a eunuch, would have been forbidden from entering the temple or worshiping God. But Ebed-Melech personally intercedes with the king on Jeremiah's behalf. He gathers a group of friends to go and to haul him out of his imprisonment in a cistern, brings clothes to reclothe him and to wrap him up and to take care of him. And then there was Baruch, the son of Neriah, a friend in Jeremiah's life who sticks closer than a brother. Baruch was a trained scribe, and he was highly educated. He would have moved in the right circles because of his education. He would have been highly connected. But he becomes Jeremiah's closest companion, this outcast. Baruch's name means blessed in Hebrew. But he was actually a blessing in Jeremiah's life. The first time we encounter Baruch is in the passage that Logan preached for us last week in Jeremiah 36. Jeremiah calls Baruch, and he dictates all of his prophecies to him, and Baruch just copies them down on a scroll. And this is probably not the first time these two individuals had met in their lives, but it is the first time that we know about. Baruch was probably a follower and admirer and supporter of Jeremiah and his ministry. But in Jeremiah 36, the prophet gives Baruch a ministry of his own. Jeremiah says, "I can't enter into the temple, and so I need you to go for me and to speak the words that I have proclaimed to you." And we are told in Jeremiah 36, verse 8, that Baruch, son of Neriah, did everything that Jeremiah the prophet told him to do. Jeremiah trusts his friend enough to send him in his place, and Baruch trusts Jeremiah enough to actually go. And in the midst of that, Baruch is detained and questioned for the message that he speaks in the temple, but he does it anyway. Baruch is the one who copied down Jeremiah's prophecies time after time. He is there as Jeremiah preaches and proclaims difficult messages from the Lord. He works side by side in Jeremiah's ministry. And Baruch also stays side by side in Jeremiah's suffering. Baruch faces punishment for his friendship with Jeremiah, and he sticks by him anyway. later, after King Jehoiakim in hatred burns Jeremiah's scroll, he sends an officer to arrest Jeremiah and Baruch, but God keeps them safe. Baruch is there when Jeremiah is imprisoned in the courtyard, when he is thrown in the stocks, whenever he is tossed down into the cistern. Baruch, because of his friendship with Jeremiah, doesn't have an easy life. In fact, one whole chapter of this book is dedicated to a prophecy that is spoken on Baruch's behalf. It's in chapter 45, and he is told, "Should you seek great things for yourself? No, do not seek them. For I will bring disaster on all people, declares the Lord, but wherever you go, I will let you escape with your life." That's a nice, happy prophecy, right? Don't seek great things. Don't even worry about it. I'm going to keep you alive. That's about all I can promise you. And Baruch sticks by him anyway. His life, his role isn't easy. He himself watches as his city, Jerusalem, is besieged and destroyed. He watches the temple where he worshipped torn apart, and he observes as the people are led off into slavery and exile throughout the empire. He stays side by side in Jeremiah's suffering. And Baruch stays side by side with Jeremiah in the exile. In the passage that Ryan read for us this morning, we find Jeremiah being hauled off in the opposite direction from the rest of the people of Judah. They are all taken north to Babylon. He is forced to go south to Egypt. He and Jeremiah, because of their friendship with Gedaliah, are then hauled off to Egypt by the people who murder Gedaliah. And there, Jeremiah and Baruch begin to write letters and correspond with the people who are in exile. According to Jewish tradition, we're told that Jeremiah dies in Egypt, and Baruch continues his ministry, keeping his legacy and his prophecies alive for the coming generations. You see, it's Jeremiah who is called by God to be the prophet, and Baruch, who is a God-given blessing of friendship in Jeremiah's life, that allowed him to have the impact and ministry that he did. And all of us need a friend like that. Someone who is willing to stand side by side with us through life's joys and adversities. And I want you to think for a moment, how many of you have a Baruch in your life? Now, maybe it's not somebody actually named Baruch, although that would be awesome. It's just not a very popular name these days. But how many of you have somebody in your life who has stood by you to this point, through thick and through thin? Many of us are raising our hands. Some of us are thinking of people. Some of us don't. The ancient Celts, the people who lived in Ireland and France and other places, had a word for this type of person. In Gaelic, this type of person is called an anam cara, or if you just translate it, a soul friend. And an Amkara is someone who is there no matter what, who walks with you through anything you encounter, through the joys and pains, through the triumphs and struggles, through the moments of intense faith and the times of difficult doubt. A soul friend was one who would minister to your soul, who would stick closer than a brother or sister, one who would help reveal the love and presence of God to you in times when you were really struggling to find it at all. And here's the secret to soul friendship. As Christians, we believe that people are made in the image of God. And those who have given their lives to Christ then have the presence of God, the Holy Spirit, living and dwelling in them. Literally, God is right there with you. And because of that, a soul friend is one who is a potential channel of grace and a mirror of God's love in your life when you need it most. That true friendship is built on compassion and self-sacrifice on behalf of another. True friends are characterized by empathy, compassion, and a careful attention to what the other person is feeling and saying and experiencing. Those true friends are places where we can feel protected and safe, where we feel like we can say anything that's on our hearts and souls, and we don't have to mince words, where we don't have to hide our true feelings. I love how Daryl Tippins, an English professor and now one of the deans at ACU, writes about this in his book called The Pilgrim Way. He writes about soul friendship as imitators of Jesus, we are here to grant others the gifts of safety, attentiveness, compassion, empathy, accountability, truth-telling, loyalty, distance, time, forgiveness, spiritual care, and selfless love. That is the core of spiritual friendship. It's difficult to define, but we know it when we see it. Those who give the time, attention, accountability, and grace that God has given to us. We can share life with that individual because it's not good for humans to be alone, and because the Creator arranged things so that we might need one another. We need friends in our lives. So do you have that kind of friend in your life? Many of us don't. We are taught implicitly that we really can't depend on other people. We are taught to be autonomous and self-reliant and independent, and that's true from the ways in which we play as children to the ways that we work as adults, and that takes a toll on our ability to make friends. Recent research has shown that the average American only has 2 close friends today, down from 3 close friends 20 years ago. And if that continues, then we will have less in just a few years. In fact, that same research shows that actually most Americans have no friends at all. They have people they call friends, they have acquaintances, they have friends in social media. But many Americans, in fact, especially men, have no one that they feel comfortable sharing their lives with. Loneliness is a real, tangible, spiritual problem. So, we need friends, we're made for friends, and many of us feel this deficit of friendship in our lives. So how do we make those friends? How do we develop an Anamkara, a soul friend that can help us develop into who God wants us to be? I really think there are just a couple of steps. First, we need to examine our own lives. Ask yourself a couple of quick questions. Do I truly believe that friendship is important? Because if you say no, then you probably don't care what it is we're talking about, right? If you say yes, then move on to the next question. Who has God put in your life that's taken the initiative to be a friend to you? Or who has God put in your life that you might be able to be a friend to? To whom do you talk about your spiritual life? To whom do you turn in times of crisis? Or do you wait until the problem in life, the crisis, is over to tell anybody about it? And what might that say about yourself? Those are some of the questions that we should ask ourselves, and things that we probably aren't always comfortable to share with other people. Let me just ask it in a very basic way. When times are toughest, to whom would you turn? Who could you trust to be there with you through it all? You could tell anything to or speak anything to. Henri Nouwen was a theologian and a practitioner who once wrote this: when we honestly ask ourselves which persons in our lives mean the most to us, we often find that it is those who, instead of giving advice, solutions, or cures, have chosen rather to share our pain and touch our wounds with a warm and tender hand. A true friend is one who can be silent with us in an hour of grief and bereavement, who can tolerate not knowing, not curing, not healing, and face with us the reality of our powerlessness. That is a friend who cares. We need friends. So ask yourself where you sit. The second step is pretty self-explanatory. Go out, befriend, and be a friend to someone. That sounds pretty simple, doesn't it? And it is a little weird, and it's awkward. To find someone that you trust, you respect, and ask them to be your friend. That feels weird at 34. My daughter does it at the playground. Every time we go out there, she makes more friends than I know how to keep up with. And she just calls them, "Hey, friend." It's great. I love it. It's weird. It's awkward as adults. But you have to start somewhere. Megan told me I could share this story. Her best friend is a girl by the name of Amy. Megan, when she went away to college, had been dating the same guy for 4 years, and they dated for another year in college and broke up as she was headed into her sophomore year, which was great for me, actually. I can't argue with that. But her friends and her identity had all been wrapped up in the person she was dating. They had the same friends, they did the same things, they went to the same places, it's who she was. And so, as she entered into her sophomore year, she realized, I don't have anybody. She went to their campus ministry's fall retreat, and in the midst of it realized that she was deeply in need of a friend, someone she could talk to and trust. And so she walked over to one of the new girls in their ministry, who she'd only interacted with a tiny bit, and said, I am in need of a friend. And I've noticed your heart and your spirit, and I was wondering if I could be friends with you. Yeah, that's awkward. It's a little weird. That takes guts. And they've been best friends ever since. Friendship is easy to understand, but it's difficult to do and sometimes seemingly difficult because it requires openness and vulnerability and love and care and a willingness to put yourself out there, and that is difficult to find. And yes, it can be tough. But how far are you willing to go for a friend? We're here today because we have a friend in God. It tells us that out of His great love for us, God befriended us and made us His children. Jesus tells us in John chapter 15 that He no longer calls them His students, His disciples. He now calls them His friends because they have walked with Him and spent time with Him, and He is about to lay down His lives for them. And the amazing thing is that that same offer of friendship is extended to us today. That God and His love for us has sent Jesus to save us, to be our friends, to lay down His life for us so that we could become friends of God. And all we have to be willing to do is say, God, I need you. Here are the things in my life in which I need you to step in. And that's difficult because it requires openness and vulnerability and honesty and trust. But how far are you willing to go for the friendship of God today? There's a way we can bless you. If anything, we can pray for or lift up before the Father. If we can rejoice with you. If we can bear your burdens. If we can introduce you to God. If we can help you put Christ on in baptism. Any way we can be a blessing in your journey today, we would love to do that. We're going to sing this song. You're welcome to respond. But we pray today you will know the friendship of God in your life. Let's sing together.